We're back. The one seat buffer after a hiatus. We're back. Tony Tone not able to make it here tonight, as one of the reasons we took such a long hiatus is the Tone family added a baby to the mix. And so that we all know, I have three. I'll introduce our special guest here in a little bit, also a father. And so, you know, when family comes about, you've got to take a little bit of break. And I changed jobs and so had to travel for work more. So we had to take a little break, but we're back just in time for some big movies to be coming out. And that will I'll introduce my guest, a person that I've known for a little bit now through some work engagements, and a guy who's been kind of in the limelight since he was 12 years old. Playing baseball in the Little League World Series, former Iowa Hawkeye and Philadelphia Eagle, but most importantly, one of the biggest comic book fans and Captain Marvel fans that I know, Julian Vandervelde. Welcome to the 1C Buffer, Julian.
It is my pleasure to be here. I'm sad Tony couldn't make it. I haven't seen him in a while, but I'm sure we'll get a chance to catch up later.
Yeah, it's crazy how like everything has kind of intermingled. Tony and I got to know each other. I was his insurance agent. Then I ended up in radio working in the sister station. And you and Tony go back to the Quad Cities days, being being from the Davenport, Iowa area. But we do have listeners all over the country, all over the Midwest. We even have a subscriber in Portugal. So nice. This goes international, does the one seat buffer.
Do you do the translation then? Are you the one who translates it into Portuguese?
Yeah, no, it's in English. Full disclosure, the one Portuguese subscriber is my first cousin. So,
okay.
So it's not. She's really from Fort Dodge. She's a Hawkeye. And so before we dive into Captain Marvel, you know, I'm a former sports writer, so I've got to ask the question, two questions here. We'll go to the first question, kind of a tougher topic. So the University of Iowa football family, which you were a member of, played 5 years for the Hawkeyes. The Hawkeye football family lost a member over the weekend in Damon Bullock, someone who kind of dovetailed towards the end of your career. But you, it's unfortunately a topic that you know a little bit too much about. As you were entering the University of Iowa, an offensive lineman, Kyle Callaway, was a teammate of yours who passed away a few years ago. Tyler Sash, another teammate of yours who passed away. And now Damon Bullock. What does that happen to the fraternity when you hear news like that?
I mean, it's tough anytime somebody dies who you know. I think it's a little bit tougher when it's somebody that you've battled with, you know, that you've been in the trenches with, that you've worked with. And these are all special guys. I mean, Callaway and I, you know, played next to each other. You know, he was a mentor and a guy that I really looked up to on that offensive line. You know, Sash, obviously, we had some good seasons together. You know, played on opposite sides of the ball, but he was the kind of guy that you could always count on to make a big play in a big moment. You know, when you kind of gravitate towards those people. And then Damon, too, you know, a guy that I was able to block for a little bit. You know, you almost feel like that's like your little brother. You know, even as an offensive lineman, all the running backs, you know, they're guys that you want to protect. They're smaller guys. You know, your job is to keep them clean, as it were. And, you know, to have a younger guy, you know, that you had a relationship with go down it's hard. It's hard to see that. And, you know, that fraternity that you kind of build, that brotherhood that you build on the gridiron, in the weight room, and in the film room, and just doing everything that we do together as football players. It's tough. It is like losing family.
And, you know, one of the other common threads with those athletes, especially yourself, Callaway and Sash, is Callaway and yourself were coached by Reese Morgan, and Sash was recruited because he handled the state of Iowa, and with Tyler being in Oskaloosa, Iowa, and like so many other Iowa-born players in South Dakota, you know, the Midwest players. Reese Morgan was your lead recruiter, and Coach Morgan, whom I got to know when I was early on in my coaching career, announced his retirement yesterday. And so we do have Hawkeye fans who listen. I have to ask the question. I've got a former offensive lineman who played for Reese Morgan. What was it like playing for Reese, and how happy are you for him that he's able to kind of go out on his own terms?
I mean, I guess I'm happy for him. it's that double-edged sword where he's one of those guys that, you know, you hope against hope that he hangs around long enough that, you know, if my son went to the University of Iowa, I would want Reese Morgan to be his coach.
That he'd be like 85.
He'd be so old, but I would still. But it's one of those things, you know. Like if anybody, you know, if you want to give anybody an immortal robot body to just live forever and continue to teach, you know, and build those relationships, it's Reese. So I mean, playing under him was awesome. You know, getting recruited by him was awesome. I've likened it to building a relationship where a lot of other schools will come in and it's more of a sales pitch. You know, this is our school. These are our credentials. This is what, you know, we do. This is how you would fit. This is why you should come here. And with Reese, he was all about just getting to know you, you know, not just you, but your family, your friends, your history. He genuinely cared so much about every single guy that he coached. You know, even after your career was over, you'd go in there and he, you know, you'd find out that he'd been keeping tabs. Oh, how's the new baby? You know, how's your mom doing? Is she still at that job? Blah, blah, blah. So it was you weren't getting a sales pitch with him. You know, you were being welcomed into a family. Right. And it really made a big difference in the way that he recruited you.
And for me as a fan, but also as someone who has coached and being around the Iowa staff just strictly from a, you know, surface view, it seems like that's a culture that's really been built, mm-hmm. starting with Kirk Ferentz and Reese Morgan. Obviously has a huge part to do with that. He was on the wasn't on the first staff, but was one of the first hires after, you know, Kirk had established himself there. You know, in 2000, I think, is when he left after he won three straight state titles at Iowa City West, which yeah. I don't think people remember how Iowa City West was an abysmal program until Reese Morgan got there. What Iowa football fans may know today, that's not the Iowa City West that Reese Morgan walked into. And so that's, I think, the joke that some of my friends in the coaching profession have always made, that, you know, Gary Barta, the athletic director at Iowa, could have hired Reese Morgan to be the head volleyball coach a few years ago, and they would have been good. He's just a good coach. He could coach mm-hmm. the dance team probably, and they'd be successful.
Yeah, I used to say he would coach, you know, national champions in underwater basket weaving if you let him. I mean, the guy was just – he was the ultimate teacher. Every position that he coached had All-Americans, had national award winners, had first-round draft picks. Just unbelievable success, and it just stemmed from the kind of person that he was and the relationships that he built and his genuine caring and longing to see every single player reach whatever their maximum potential was. He was going to get you there.
Yeah, we saw it this weekend. If you watched the NFL Combine, Anthony Nelson, defensive lineman for the Hawkeyes, really showed out in Indianapolis over the weekend, and was a guy who has a lot of physical tools, but you can tell was well prepared in his time at Iowa. We could do a whole separate sports podcast, but really, it's a good segue. Coach Morgan's influence on people, you know, when you look at the real life mentorship that coaches and educators and people like Reese Morgan bring to high level athletes, it's kind of, there are some parallels. I'm watching this Captain Marvel movie. There are some parallels with some of the origin stories mm-hmm. of these superheroes. And you know, I think that when you come into a movie like Captain Marvel, and we've got some bullet points that we're going to talk about in a little bit, it's a character that, as someone who didn't pay a lot of attention to the Marvel universe like I didn't growing up, it's a character I knew very little about until a couple of years ago when they started rumoring that this movie was going to happen. You know, as someone who has a lot more base knowledge than I do, did the movie – I was concerned that they were going to spend too much time with origin story, because sometimes right. these movies do. I thought they handled it pretty well.
They did, and I think Marvel's getting better and better at that. They've kind of come to the realization that the origin story is a little bit played out at this point, right? Spider-Man didn't even get an origin movie. It was just kind of, you know what? We should know who Spider-Man is at this point. Yeah, and everybody gets it.
We're gonna probably spoil some things. So if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert. Stop the podcast now. Press pause. Thank you for subscribing to the One Seat Buffer. But if you have seen it, and go.
I give people 1 week from the time I see. Like when the movie comes out, you have 7 days to go see that movie before I think it's spoiler season at that point. If you get to next Friday and you haven't seen this movie yet,
maybe next Sunday,
then you deserve to have it spoiled at that point. It's just, yeah, stay. If you're going to go on the weekend, just stay off of social media until after you've seen it. But it's I've been waiting for this movie since I found out that Marvel was doing a whole MCU, right? When Samuel L. Jackson, when Nick Fury comes out at the end of Iron Man in the post-credits scene, and you realize that this isn't just a one-shot movie,
right.
They're about to do The Avengers. At that point, I was ready already for Captain Marvel. She is my second favorite all-time female superhero. After Colossus's little sister Ileana, her name is Magic. She's a mutant who gets taken to Marvel's version of the underworld, and she's trained in sorcery, and she kicks the devil out of his territory and takes over. She's awesome. But Captain Marvel is a close second. Carol Danvers, there's been so many Captain Marvels over the years, so many people who wear that mantle, but Carol Danvers is the best.
Well, and I tried to do some deep dive research, and like you said, there are three or four iterations of the Captain Marvel character, and they settled on the Carol Danvers version, which seems to be one of the more popular versions. And just let's you talked about that first weekend and spoiler. Let's just talk about the dollars and cents, because that's ultimately why they're making these movies.
Right.
So Black Panther, the opening weekend was right around $200 million. In Infinity War was around $260 mm-hmm. million. I'm going to guess, if I was handicapping this, I would maybe set the over-under at like $185 million. What do you think that this thing is going to do? Are you going to take the over or the under on that $185?
I will take the over on that, but I'm nervously doing that, not because of anything wrong with the movie, but because of the culture of Dude Bros, who I know have already decided that because it's a female lead movie and because it's been marketed as kind of a female empowerment movie, that they're just already against it. And it's a terrible, toxic environment within nerd culture that exists, but it does exist and it has to be acknowledged. So I do think that that this movie will take a little bit of a hit because of that, but at the same time, it's going to draw in a whole another section of audience that I don't think Marvel has had up to this point. So in the long term, I think it'll make I don't know if it'll make as much as Black Panther, probably not as much as a full team-up flick, but it'll make its
Black
money
Panther
for sure.
Made $1.2 billion.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
It was a really good movie,
too.
It was outstanding.
But I think you hit on it. One of the reasons Black Panther was so successful is it energized a base of people who often didn't feel like they had a place in this type of movie. Mm-hmm. Wonder Woman we saw a few years ago with the DC Universe, pretty successful movie. I think this is going to blow Wonder Woman out of the water.
Oh, it'll wreck shop. It'll absolutely wreck shop.
And which is probably a fair parallel. I mean, these were kind of the two flagship female characters for each universe. But I don't even know why they make the DC movies anymore. I mean,
I haven't seen, and this is terrible of me. This is such a knock to my nerd cred.
You just had a baby.
That I haven't seen Aquaman, and it's Jason Momoa, and
little known fact, I played soccer against Aquaman.
Are you serious? You played against Jason?
Yeah, we're the
That's
same
amazing.
Age.
Amazing.
And apparently one of my good buddies, he's like, you realize we played soccer against him at a tournament. So we played soccer against Superman and Aquaman.
And
they're on the same high school soccer team in Norwalk.
That's
so
freaking spectacular. Yeah, and I'm with you there. DC has they will continue to make their movies because they will continue to make enough money to support that. But DC kills in the animated movies. I think they're selling more comics than Marvel right now. But the Marvel Cinematic Universe is just unparalleled. And all the problems that I had with Wonder Woman, I don't have that with this. And all the, you know, and for all the screaming that was done about, let's get, you know, Black Widow's solo movie, I'm excited for what I hope will one day be like a buddy cop team up of Black Widow and Hawkeye doing their thing. But I think this was the right choice for Marvel for their first female-led superhero movie.
And I'm not going to pretend that I know, but maybe ScarJo's like,
she might not.
I don't really want to do it. Maybe she doesn't. I mean, that's a lot. I think one of the things is just from a work standpoint, you know, these big ensemble movies I mean, these stars are able to come in, maybe work 15, 30 days, shoot their part of this movie, mm-hmm. and then they're on to their next project. You know, so I mean, there might be something to say: is do I really want to do a 60-day, 70-day shoot as a, you know, as the lead character in a movie driven by me, or do we just
yeah, when she's already doing like Ghost in the Shell and stuff like that,
or going and doing a play on Broadway or something mm-hmm. like that. I mean. There's something to be said, like Chris Evans. He's on Broadway right now.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's. I'm trying to remember what play he's in, but it's like it's a heavy hitter drama type role.
That's
but,
awesome.
Yeah, and so that's where these movies kind of allow these actors to kind of maybe do some of the projects that they want to do. But let's talk about Brie Larson.
Mm-hmm.
She's come a long way from Jonah Hill's girlfriend in 21 Jump Street. She goes from that movie, which is kind of her first big commercial success. Then to The Room, where she's nominated for an Academy Award, and now here she is. She's Captain Marvel, and she's going to probably be the next big thing to push this whole universe forward.
Yeah, I mean, between her and Ant-Man, because I don't think that they're going to introduce Adam Warlock in Endgame, you've got the makings of the means to defeat Thanos. Which you know they really didn't have until the very end of the movie when Thor comes in, you know, and breaks things up. But you know, you see a new level of power in this. There's certainly something to be said about. I was a little nervous when they said they were going back to the 90s, you know, to do this. But I think that it fits itself into the Marvel storyline very well. They've done the team in charge. Of the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe has done such a spectacular job of moving forwards and backwards in this timeline and maintaining, for the most part, the credibility of things that they've set up in previous movies. I am desperate to know what happened to Goose between this movie and Iron Man. That is, I think, my biggest concern. But I think the thing that I'm most excited about as far as Brie Larson having this role is that it obviously clears the way for Scott Pilgrim to enter the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is an inside joke that almost nobody who listens to this is probably going to get.
But for if there's one person who does, then thank you. Then I certainly don't get that.
My favorite comic book series of all time, Scott Pilgrim. They made it into a movie.
Did it have Michael Cera?
Cera, and they did some things with it that I didn't genuinely didn't appreciate. They did some things that I genuinely did appreciate. But the fact that Michael Cera's Scott Pilgrim has now beaten up, defeated in combat, Superman and Captain America, and has dated Captain Marvel, I think means that that Scott Pilgrim is the greatest superhero of all time.
Are you talking? Okay, because he obviously plays Lex Luthor in the. Is that where you're going?
No, that's Jesse. That's Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, that's Jesse Eisenberg. That's Jesse Eisenberg. Right. You're right.
It's a whole. Somebody will get this.
I hope they
and
do.
Will write in, or else you're going to get a lot of people who are really angry. Like, I don't understand the Scott Pilgrim bit. Move on to something else. So let's just move on to something else.
I don't care. What are they going to do? This is the One Seat Buffer podcast.
You can Julian, at me,
Julian Vandervelde. You can you can follow him at Batmandervelde on Twitter. And you also can, if you need some solar roof, he's my go-to guy for
there
solar.
You go.
Moxie Solar, look him up, Julian Vandervelde.
Give me a call, man. Doesn't cost you anything.
The One Seat Buffer podcast, we're talking Captain Marvel. So I misspoke. Brie Larson won the Academy Award.
Heck yeah.
For Room. So, I mean, here's the, and you could tell, like, she, it'd be really easy for this movie to be like, oh, here's this really beautiful, like, just classically beautiful woman trying to be a superhero, and she actually plays the role. You can, and they it's been well documented in the publicity tour about the workouts that she did to prepare for this role. But I think the thing is it at no point is it like, oh, here's this smoking hot girl, like her costuming is so provocative,
mm-hmm.
you know. And let's talk a little bit about who won this movie a little bit. So, who won the movie? You could argue a lot of different things. I want to hear your opinion before I kind of weigh in on my who won the movie, because I think it's always going to be Brie Larson related, I think, ultimately.
That's true. Who won the movie? I think Marvel won the movie because they were able to present someone who will be Regardless, I think, of who dies in Endgame, because people are going to die. I think they have their, you know, their lead character going into stage four of the MCU. They have created a character whose backstory is provocative, who has ties intergalactically that can lead them in some really interesting directions that they haven't gone yet outside of maybe like Guardians of the Galaxy. A strong leader who brings intangibles to the table that if, as I'm suspecting, Captain America goes down in Endgame, that they can, you know, continue forward in that same vein of you know, kind of tactician and military leadership. And they did it in a way where, yeah, it was tasteful. Her, you know, they didn't get overly provocative. The costuming was practical and had purpose. You know, the power set made sense for what had happened, and obviously they had to tweak her backstory a bit. You can't do the same old, make it too predictable. And I mean, I thought I had this thing figured out beforehand, and some of the twists I did not see coming. So I was really impressed with the fact that they were able to pull it off.
How they kind of did the backstory, and again, spoiler, it's almost a little bit like the Bourne Identity meets the Marvel Universe. Like there was some kind of this amnesiac quality to the backstory and how mm-hmm. they kind of curated that throughout the movie. Where do you think this movie ranks in the Marvel universe? For me, my favorite Marvel movie is the first Ant-Man, because I'm a sucker for good comedy writing.
There we go.
And I really, really, really enjoyed that. But as far as, like, obviously the movies go, mm-hmm. I still that first Iron Man, I think it just was so good.
Oh, it's so hard to beat that.
Yeah, to me that's the best one. But this one, where do you think Captain Marvel kind of falls in that ladder, you know, first glance?
There's a lot of different things that have to be included in that. All in all, I put it kind of, you know, at this point we've had, what, 23 like different movies within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So somewhere it's in the top half. It's not in my top five, but it's up in the top 10 probably. You know, the stuff with the fact that they were able to tie in actual comic book elements of Carol's backstory into this movie. You know, I'm not a big fan of the fact that they changed the cat's name from Chewie to Goose. I didn't think that was necessary, but it is what it is. I think
are they trying to throw a little bit to Top Gun there?
I think that's what
because it was the fighter pilot environment.
But it seemed like an unnecessary step in my personal opinion. I'm not necessarily a purist, but like little changes like that are unnecessary, I don't necessarily like that. But you know, the stuff with like the memory loss and the way she gets her powers and all this stuff, it's not exactly like it is in the comics, but there are elements of it that have been incorporated. And as far as action, as far as the sequencing and the way that they put things together, was really only one scene that I was kind of like, huh? You know, seemed like they could have done it better. Outside of that, I thought they did a great job with it. I'm a big fan of the humor that Marvel puts into these movies. I thought that was a little drier in this one than some of the others. But man, the Stan Lee tribute, you know, was powerful. They got me. I think they did a really nice job of that. And hopefully they can continue to, you know, pay homage to his legacy moving forward as well.
Well, I like how they also just, from a film nerd perspective, I mean, the opening third of the movie, you have, so like I said, some of this Bourne Identity type, mm-hmm. you know, jogging of the memory, going back, well, who am I, what am I, how did I get here? But then you even just have, just from a filmmaking perspective, a little bit of a homage to, you know, the French Connection, where they're the police are chasing a subway, elevated subway train, you know, kind of back to that, to those types of movies, which I think it'd be really easy in a comic book to do as much CGI as you possibly can. Uh-huh. But they did a nice job of using good practical effects and some physical set pieces mm-hmm. In this movie. That and I think this is one of those movies, just to make a football analogy, it's kind of like that a trap play, you know, the one that you think probably you're going to get 3 to 6 yards on, but you know you've got to run it in order to set up the play action pass that's going to go for 60. Uh-huh. You know, and so I kind of feel like that's kind of way this movie was. You knew what it was. It was setting things up for, I mean, we're going to see Captain Marvel again in Endgame here in a few months.
Yeah, the payoff, and I don't even know that the payoff is necessarily Endgame. You know, her part in Endgame will obviously be substantial. But I think really that the payoff for this movie comes in stage four. You know, Thanos goes down in Endgame. They've got to, you know, they kind of tie up this circle that they've been, you know, creating with the Infinity Stones and everything. And one of the big questions, well, where do they go from there? You know, which Marvel storyline do they, you know, get into at that point? And the big one that I really wanted to see within the Marvel Cinematic Universe going forward was the Secret Invasion. And, you know, now we've introduced Skrulls. We've introduced their power set. Definitely did not see them being sympathetic characters in this, but you know, somewhere within the timeline between the end of this movie and the end of Avengers Endgame, you know, they will have had time to populate and the ability with light speed travel to make it back to our galaxy, and now you're setting yourself up for the Secret Invasion. So I think that's a possibility, the Super Skrull and all that stuff going on. But the payoff for this movie, I think, is going to come down the road, and we don't necessarily know what it is yet, but it's going
to
be sweet.
Well, we had to know that Jude Law was going to be a bad guy.
You did. When you see,
it's,
yeah.
it's Jude Law.
You knew he was going to be a bad guy, but I didn't expect them to do that to basically the entire Kree. Like, the Kree-Skrull War in the comics is such a big, convoluted thing with so many webs and pieces going here and there. And they already did Ronan the Accuser, you know, as a villain in a movie. And I thought that was, you know, that was as far as they would push the Kree as far as being villains. But they've kind of set them up now to also be like a big bad that has to be taken care of. The Guardians of the Galaxy have gone and pissed off another alien race, right? Like, we're setting up this intergalactic thing where all these heroes who have really messed things up and pissed off a lot of people across multiple star systems are kind of converging on Earth. You know, and I think that's kind of a stage four thing, is where we get into some of those storylines.
Which, I realized I forgot to say who won the movie a little while ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. No, that's great information. But you kind of just reminded me of, so we were talking about Jude Law being a villain and all of you, the intergalactic, you know, that reminded me of, I'm just waiting for that next movie about all the intergalactic war to feature the Beastie Boys song, Intergalactic. And for me, honestly, the winner of this movie was the entire 90s music catalog. being a child of the 90s, I graduated high school in 2000. And you've got nothing better and one of the best uses of that opening bass line to I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt. That was perfect placement of that song. Mm-hmm. Nirvana is in this thing. You got Shoop, which makes its return to the Marvel universe. And then you had so many great 90s soundtracks. The music supervision in this movie, to me, is ultimately what won it, because that kept you grounded in where they set this movie. They set it back about, you know, 20 years from present day, and like in that late 90s, Blockbuster Video and Radio Shack are making appearances in this movie. And for me, the winner is really that the 90s. The 90s were victorious.
And it's kind of cool to see, you know, kind of the juxtaposition of, like, when you had Guardians of the Galaxy, and the big winner in Guardians of the Galaxy was definitely the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
As well. The soundtrack, it was probably like Grease, where the soundtrack sold better than the movie did. But the juxtaposition of that was all music from a certain era, and they were certainly trying to evoke certain emotions with the music, but it was, you know, a space opera where the music was cool, but what was happening wasn't necessarily married to it, in terms of the feel and the tone and the look. Whereas this was 90s. If you were a 90s kid, there are jokes that you're going to get. Yeah. There are references that you're going to understand that none of the kids that come to this movie with you are going to get. And it kind of makes – there's a little like part of your heart that goes, oh, this is kind of for us.
I'll say this. No girl I ever saw growing up looked like Brie Larson wearing a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt. Like that was – the Nine Inch Nails t-shirt won the day for this movie. And I don't want to sound like a perv, but – I mean, that was a look that they pulled off well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even Trent Reznor would be happy with that. And I'm surprised that they didn't use a Nine Inch Nails song in this movie. But Trent probably would have wanted to be the composer, since he's a big movie composer now. But it's just, I like how these Marvel movies, They make them in a way that you don't have to have extensive knowledge of the universe mm-hmm. to enjoy. This is honestly kind of a, you could make this a date movie. The opening scene is kind of a, there's a little playful tension between Jude Law, who women go crazy for, and Brie Larson, who men go crazy for. It's like this is almost a date movie, not just mm-hmm. a comic book flick.
Yeah, they did a really nice job of balancing everything. And you're right. Hats off. When I say that the winner of this movie is Marvel, I mean, I don't think that they've really lost yet. Every single movie, they have managed to somehow create, for the most part, a universe where at least the solo films, the team-ups, you kind of have to have a little bit of base knowledge going back.
Right.
But the solo flicks, they stand on their own pretty nicely for the most part. You don't have to have the extensive knowledge, but if you do, you're going to pick up things that are going to kind of, you know, it's a little wink and a nod to the people who have been reading, you know, comic books since the Silver Age. So the fact that you don't have to have a base knowledge of, at this point, really even the Marvel Universe, because this is the first one in the timeline. Besides, I mean, you know, Captain America, sure. The First Avenger obviously takes place during World War II, but this is the first one as far as, you know, Nick Fury and they're setting up the Avengers and all that stuff in this timeline. So you don't have to have a base knowledge of anything that's happened in the previous movies to really enjoy this one.
Yeah, and I think that's what they failed with those Fantastic Four attempts. I just think that they tried to be too inside baseball with those movies. And for me, who didn't have any of that background knowledge, like the Silver Surfer loses me every time I see a movie that he's fair. Involved with. And it's just because I haven't committed the brain space to grasp a lot of this alien stuff. And I think that that's why so many people liked Star Wars more than Star Trek, and I know that there's people out there throwing their phones across the car.
I have several, I know, yeah.
Right now. But at least in my circles, Star Wars over Star Trek, because Star Trek was always more about, you know, alien civilization and, you know, this, where Star Wars was about people who looked like us, like just avoiding getting shot by the aliens. So that's kind of and being chased by intergalactic bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. That's why I think that movies like this, where yes, you there are aliens, but they're shape shifting into they look like humans most of the time.
Right.
You know, it's a little less, and the Kree look like Earth people for the most part. So I think that it's not as hard for the casual fan to suspend that reality, because for the most part, everybody looks. And it really speaks to how simpleton we are, I guess, as a society that we have to be looking at things that look like us in order to get it.
Well, some of that too is just the concepts associated with, like, what, you know, when you look at the things that that Fox has done with their Marvel properties and what Sony has done with their Marvel properties, Fox in particular, you do get into this idea where they're getting into the cosmic stuff, right? The Silver Surfer and Galactus and things are cosmic ideas. And I get so worried about Dark Phoenix, because the Dark Phoenix is another one of these cosmic forces in Marvel Comics that is really hard to understand.
Is that the Jean Grey character from X-Men?
Which I love so much about the X-Men, and I cannot wait for Disney and Marvel to stage a hostile takeover and take their stinking properties back from these heathens who are just wrecking the Fantastic Four and wrecking the X-Men, you know, and we get it back to a place where we can get all these characters under one roof and in one thing, because Marvel clearly at this point, Marvel and Disney have figured it out. They figured out how to humanize these alien species, how to not make, you know, power sets so ridiculous that you can't understand them, make the stakes so huge that you can't understand it. They make it relatable and understandable in a way that you can enjoy the movie and not just leave scratching your head going, what in the heck did I just watch?
Like, that's what one of the Thor movies is like that.
Yeah,
remember. The one that was right before Ragnarok. It was really weird. Mm-hmm. And then they completely redeemed themselves
with
Ragnarok.
Yeah, Thor 2 was probably the I think it was the bottom, that or Iron Man 3. One of those two is my last place.
How's Doctor Strange fit into that category?
I really, really liked Doctor Strange.
I did too, but it just didn't feel the same.
And the thing that I liked about Doctor Strange was that that the movie felt kind of like his comic book character is supposed to. when we get into things like the Avengers are supposed to be more, human and grounded and something that we can kind of understand, right? People fighting to defend the Earth, that's cool. Doctor Strange's stakes are much higher. His power set is much more complicated, and the people that he has to go up against on a daily basis are way more dangerous than a lot of the things that, like, Captain America has to go up against. So his movie had to be a little psychedelic and out there, you know? And if we do it, there are certain characters that that's just going to be the way it is. Anytime you're going up against Dormammu, anytime you're getting the galactic forces, eternity and death and all these, you know, these big things that have personifications in the universe. With Guardians of the Galaxy 2, we saw our first of the ancient beings that has existed since the beginning of time. I guess technically the Collector is one too, but just these beings that are beyond human comprehension. Things are going to get a little weird, but I really, really like Doctor Strange, but I could see how that one would be a little bit harder to kind of wrap the brain around sometimes what they're dealing with. The Dormammu thing I thought was pushed it a little far.
The best thing about the Doctor Strange movies, again, and maybe it's because I'm a music nerd, is, you know, everything is about his hands in the opening part. He's a surgeon, and everything in that movie was piano ostinatos. And just, it was just brilliant composition. I think Hans Zimmer actually was involved with the score for that. But another winner of this movie, and he's probably a big winner in life too, Clark Gregg.
Clark Gregg's back.
Woo! Nick Fury's sidekick. Clark Gregg, actor, married to Jennifer Grey of Dirty Dancing.
Really?
That is his spouse in real life. The nerdy agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is married to the Dirty Dancing girl and Ferris Bueller's sister. Mm-hmm. So he wins. He's victorious.
He wins hands down 100%. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still going, too, isn't it?
I think it's kicking, yeah.
Yeah, I watched like the first 2.5, maybe 3 seasons, and then I kind of fell out.
That's a show that I haven't started in its entirety yet. I've caught – it's on streaming now, so I'm going to probably get back into it. Mm-hmm. I always pick one or two shows that I just binge. Right now I'm on my second rewatching of the TV show New Girl, which I laugh out loud. But
is that Zoe Deschanel? Is that
that
one?
Okay. Yeah, but and she's not. I like her, but anyway, that movie. So I think once I'm done with this season, I'll probably go Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then I'll be on my 7th time through Parks and Recreation.
For sure.
That's probably where I'm going with that.
That's my Office as well. Is when other people are like, I've seen The Office 13 times. Like, yeah, I've seen Parks and Rec as many times at least. I think it's a superior show. Yeah, fight me.
Agree. If Tony was here, we would all three agree on that. Now, I like The Office, but Parks and Rec gave us, mm-hmm. Peter Quill. Chris Pratt.
That's true.
Brought him into the universe.
That's so outrageous to me that Chris Pratt started out as Andy Dwyer, and I could still go back, and he's every bit as entertaining.
My favorite, and listen, folks, you know the format. We go all over the place. My favorite Parks and Rec line from Andy Dwyer is when Leslie Knope has the flu and she's walking out, and he goes, "Leslie, it says you might have internet connectivity problems." And then I watched a behind the scenes YouTube clip, and like the head writer of the show was like, "That line, Chris Pratt just did it on his own. That's not in the script." And mm-hmm. people come up to me all the time, and I have to tell them, "No, we didn't write that. That was all him. He improvised it." And I wonder how much improvisation goes into these movies. Like Ant-Man, mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of improvised dialogue.
They talk about that sometimes, about how some of these movies are. I know Thor Ragnarok was mostly improv.
And when you have people like Hemsworth is an underrated actor. I think he's an underrated comedic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm totally drawing a blank.
Tom Hiddleston?
No, him. But in Ragnarok, Jurassic Park.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum. What is wrong with me? It's 1 a.m. almost. That's what's wrong with us. It is 1 a.m. Again, we're recording this in the lovely Palms Theater in Muscatine, Iowa. How did you think that was your first? Was that your first experience with our XL screen?
I think that was my first time. Actually, that was either my first or my second time seeing a movie here at the Palms. And
That is the largest screen currently in the state of Iowa. There
is
a bigger one being built in Waukee, Iowa right now.
In Waukee of all places.
Yeah, okay. Shocker. Waukee, fastest growing municipality in the state. But so tremendous film, tremendous place to watch this movie. The One Seat Buffer podcast, Julian Vandevelde, Joel Krausar. Okay, so we talked a little bit about who won the movie. We talked about where this ranks in the pantheon of Marvel films. Now, one thing I was concerned about Marvel fatigue. And my wife commented on this a couple days ago, and I said we were coming to do this. And she's like, ugh, another comic book movie? And I think that that's a real reaction amongst people who may not be as invested as we are. And I mean, I was concerned that this is going to be, if it's not really good, this could be bad timing, because it seemed like last year every big movie was a Marvel movie or comic book related. This, I think, is going to do okay. I don't think that it's going to be fatiguing for people.
I agree with you. I think that the only area that I really see Marvel fatigue taking place is in their properties outside of this, like the outside X-Men of the stuff. Theaters. Fox needs to just stop making X-Men movies altogether.
Days of Futures Past and Present.
Yeah, they got to stop.
Christmas Carol, X-Men.
Don't even get me started on Days of Future Past, because I'll go for an hour just on how crappy that movie was.
The title was awful.
Awful, awful from start to finish. No, Sony needs to give all of the rights of Spider-Man. Just let the whole thing go back to Marvel. It's not worth it. But I think, like, you look at what's happening with Netflix, right? The Defenders was awesome. First season of every single show. Daredevil season, the first four episodes of Daredevil season two are the best movie that Marvel has made. Period. The end. The Punisher arc there between the beginning of that season and when the Punisher goes down right before he goes to jail. If you could somehow get his fight scene in jail into those first four episodes, I would watch it every week on the week. But I
watched the first season of Luke Cage and really enjoyed it. And then it just kind of petered out there for
Jessica
me.
Jones was really good. I love David Tennant. Daredevil's first two seasons were amazing. Iron Fist I thought was okay. The Defenders was good. But what's happened over there, obviously, is that they've canceled all of them now.
Yeah.
I think they've gotten to the point where before they ever got to Defenders 2, all of the individual ones have been canceled, which is unfortunate. I know they got Cloak and Dagger going right now. They've got some smaller things going on, like some streaming services. Sure. But in
something
the theaters,
on Crackle. I wanted to say that they have
I don't
some
even know
property.
What Crackle is, to be honest,
it is a free thing that I think you can get on streaming. That's where Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee got started.
Okay.
So
interesting.
I think Netflix owns them now, actually. I think
that seems like something that would happen. That seems to be happening a
Which
lot.
Which is hilarious that Marvel has this relationship with Netflix, and they kind of throw a Barb blockbuster in this movie.
A little bit.
Because I remember being in business classes in college when Blockbuster had the chance to buy Netflix.
Yeah, and they were like,
it was like under $1 billion. It was a ridiculously low amount. And they're like, no, we don't really think that that's going to work out. And now
look at it.
Yeah, one is a Stegosaurus and the other is nuclear fusion.
That's why, MySpace and Zanga, all these things eventually. If you don't get those when they're under $1 billion, when they're worth $100 billion, then there's nothing you
can do. That's the cool thing about being the age that we are, is that in our mid-30s, early 30s, is that we saw AOL become, or we saw World Book Encyclopedias become Alta Vista, which there's a great shout out to Alta Vista in this movie.
Holy smokes.
We saw World Book Encyclopedia become Alta Vista and dial-up internet, and then we saw that go to AOL Instant Messenger. And then, or ICQ, and then to AOL. Mm-hmm. And now we obviously live where we have a more powerful computer in our hands and pockets on a daily basis. And I had my dorm room in 2005.
Yeah.
But it's just remarkable to see all this technology. And we're in the generation that can actually say, hey, listen, I remember. Now, my dad would be like, hey, do you remember the slide rule? Because I got one of those.
I do remember having to go, find a book using the Dewey Decimal System. Like, that's the earliest thing. I can remember, and that was I think I was in elementary school. Yeah, the card catalog. But where did we come from with this? Because I know, I had somewhere I was going, and then
I was just saying it was our generation. We got to see all this stuff happen.
We did, which is amazing. And the burnout, that's what it was. So our generation hasn't burned out.
Right.
The Netflix, Marvel on Netflix is burning out. DC's killing it. All of their TV stuff is killer.
Aren't they going to go with another Suicide Squad movie?
I don't know. That's the thing. DC needs to stop making movies. Marvel needs to stick to making movies. And if they each stay in their lane, then they're both going to be really, really successful. But I don't think that Marvel burnout, I can see how that might be affecting some people, right? One thing that I think Marvel's done really well is manage to take the individual movies and make them and do them in different ways so that they kind of stay fresh, right? Like Guardians of the Galaxy, weird property. Nobody thought it was going to work. Turned out to be, it's one of my top three Marvel movies of all time. And
both of them were good.
They're both good. Space opera, though. You're going space opera. Maybe Captain America, the original Avenger, or the first Avenger, was a period piece for World War II. You know, Doctor Strange was, I heard it was supposed to be kind of a horror movie. It turned into like a psychedelic flick sort of deal. But each one of these movies has a little bit different feel to it, right? Well, arguably, the best movie they've made, Captain America Winter Soldier, was like an international espionage, like, you know, spy flick.
It's like a James Bond movie.
Almost. Yeah, exactly.
Like that's almost what Winter Soldier was. And Ant-Man is your buddy comedy. you're almost like a buddy cop movie is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's so funny because they're just like, there's these people sitting in the Disney office saying, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? It's like 48 hours gave us a great format. Let's make Ant-Man 48 hours with less swearing.
Yeah.
And racism. it's really a similar movie. I mean, there's no reason to try to make it something that they're not. And I think that's where like some of those Fantastic Four properties fell flat, as they were trying to outthink the room. It's like, you know what? Let's just make a good movie.
Yeah, the guys at Disney Marvel have done a fantastic job of keeping it relatively fresh. Sooner or later, they're going to run out of things to do, and eventually as they dip into more and more of these properties, things are going to get interesting. But I can't wait to see how they continue to kind of push the boundaries and innovate a little bit. Sooner or later, we're going to get a Marvel horror flick. You know, sooner or later,
Jordan Peele's going to direct it.
Oh, right. God, if Jordan Peele could do, I'm pushing it right now. Please, please make I can never remember if her name is pronounced Magic or Magique, because she's Russian, and it's spelled with a K. So I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's
just
Magique.
We're going to create the standard right now. It's Magique.
It's Magique. Make this movie. It'll be like it's like the whole how they, you don't have the rights to X-Men, but you could use Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. Right? Like, pull Ileana into this thing. You know, little girl starts developing powers, doesn't understand it, gets, you know, dragged, accidentally teleports herself into an alternate dimension.
It's almost Stephen King-like.
You could do this. Exactly. And the horror aspect of it with the demons and all this stuff and understanding her powers and overcoming, you know, the devil and having this mentor in alternate universe Storm. There's, you know, I think it could be really, really cool, but that's just because it's my favorite character of all time, so I'm going to push it.
And push it, you should. And so one of the things we like to do at the end of our podcasts is kind of talk a little bit about the previews that we saw. In Spider-Man, we saw the Spider-Man that's coming out this summer. And Spider-Man is my favorite of all of the, because I like snarky, comedic teenagers, I guess, is what it all boils down to.
Tom Holland how does he rank in your Spider-Man?
He's the best one for me so far. I mean,
I know some people who would fight you for that, but I agree with you. So
who are they?
People I know, I know two people.
Are they Tobey Maguire guys?
I know two people who really, really liked whoever was after Tobey Maguire. I can't remember.
Andrew Garfield. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really liked him.
Social Network.
I thought he was too angsty, personally.
See, and all I see is Social Network when I see
that's
him.
That's fair. Yeah.
That's who he is to me.
Mm-hmm. And then I have a bunch of friends who are Tobey Maguire fans, and I'm like, no, Tom Holland
has... Are they Andrew Garfield fans, or are they Emma Stone fans?
No, they like the way Garfield portrays Spider-Man. And I think that he's just too... He's too weepy. He's too angsty. There's
the
too
best,
much.
The best part of those movies are Sally Field and Martin Sheen as the Guardians. I mean, it really... It's just... To me, that was brilliant casting. And Dennis Leary as the dad, as Emma Stone's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Leary is an underrated actor. He needs to be in more things. Rescue Me, perhaps one of the most underrated television shows in the history of TV. That's and Sandlot. Dennis Leary is in Sandlot. So I just like how they've kind of worked this character, this Spider-Man, in. He's funnier and he's a little bit more believable as a high school student.
He's
only like 22 years old. So
he's definitely more believable as a high school student than any of the others. I just my thing with this movie is how there's no way that Jake Gyllenhaal's Mysterio does not wind up being the villain at the end of this, right? Like, I understand if you've never, if you've never like read the comic book or anything, or you don't know anything about the character, I get maybe coming into this going like, oh, who's this crazy guy with the fishbowl on his head flying around shooting green stuff? But for those of us who watched like the Spider-Man cartoon,
which I did, read the
comics, he's a bad guy. And they've done this before. They did this with Doctor Strange, with Baron Mordo being, you know, a good guy who turns at the end of the movie.
Well, and they did it even a little bit with, you know, the Goblin in the first, you know, the Tobey Maguire.
Right.
I mean, it was, you know, it was the Willem Dafoe was, you know, taking over versus there was that dual personality, I guess.
Right. But. And there's a big difference between, like, in this movie, in Captain Marvel, where you have people who are bad from the beginning, but you don't know that they're bad until almost the end of the movie, versus somebody who genuinely wants to do good and winds up being turned evil by something. But Mysterio is a villain, and so I'm wondering how they're going to tie in him being a villain with this movie without making it too terribly obvious. And will they actually kind of shed that, you know, and maybe keep him as a rival, you know, to Spider-Man, who maybe has the best of intentions and winds up, you know, inadvertently being turned bad.
Right.
I'm excited to see how they're going to make it.
Yeah,
work.
I think it'll be good. And the ensemble that they've put together, those kids are so funny in that movie. And I'm just looking forward to how they. Again, I like to laugh in these movies, and Marvel's done a good job with that. So Spider-Man, that's coming out this summer. Dumbo comes out in a couple weeks. Where are you at on these Disney?
I hate it. I am so vehemently, adamantly against these stupid live action remakes of Disney classics. I do not like it one little bit. I don't even know if I'm going to go see Aladdin, which is one of my all time favorites. And the fact that they were cutting Be Prepared out of Lion King to replace it with Nala having a song.
It's
like the best villain song in the Disney universe. You can't cut Be Prepared. No. That's ridiculous. So I can't stand it. I don't like it. I'm probably never going to actually go see one in theaters. But
did you see Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, it's my wife's favorite movie of all time.
The new one?
Yeah.
Okay.
She loves the new Beauty and the Beast. And I get it. You know, that's her thing, so I've watched it with her.
Dumbo looks good.
It looks okay.
I'm a big Tim Burton guy, so that's, I think has he ever screwed up the circus? I don't think he ever has. This is his third circus.
What were his other circuses?
Pee-wee's Big Top.
Wait, that was a Tim Burton movie?
He directed the first two Pee-wee movies.
Wow,
so Pee-wee's Big Top, Big Fish. And then Dumbo. This is his third circus, and I feel like Big Fish, Jude Law's best performance.
You think so?
Yeah, that and the sniper hitman in Road to Perdition.
Uh-huh.
But I guess I'm a Tim Burton guy. So and my wife hates the Dumbo cartoon, so I think I'm on an island of like going to see Dumbo by myself with a theater full of children, probably, which is going to be awkward. But I think the CGI looks good.
Mm-hmm. It's a heck of a cast.
The trailer is outstanding.
Yeah,
I mean, if the trailer is half as good as the movie, I think we're going to be happy with that. Then the other Disney is just going to be printing money for the next 10 months.
When have they not, though?
This is true. Frozen 2. We saw a little bit. I mean, okay, so how old is your oldest?
So my oldest is 6. My daughter is turning 3 at the end of this month. So I've seen Moana more times than I've seen Frozen, but we went through both. Frozen was the first movie that we had like on repeat in the house where the kids were just like Frozen, Frozen, Frozen. I want Elsa, I want Elsa, I want Elsa. So we probably watched that movie 150 times. We've probably seen Moana 250 times. And I think Moana is a better movie than Frozen, but this trailer has me jacked for Frozen 2, which is insane for me to even say.
So one of the things that you and I both have in common is singing. We grew up singing. We took voice lessons in college, you know, at that. Do your kids, my kids, one of my son came home one day and he's like, Dad, my friend's like parents don't know the songs. Like, how, like, do your kids take for granted that you can sing like a duet, like Love Is an Open Door with them, like mine do? Like, they're like, what? Why don't my friend's parents, why don't my friend's dad sing along with Frozen? Like, I like these movies because right. I get to, like, it gives me a reason to learn a new song to sing.
Right. And I'm not at that point yet. My son, my oldest son, not the baby, obviously, but my oldest son doesn't really sing. He's a watcher. He likes the sure. movies. He likes to watch the movies. My daughter absolutely digs the music. She tries to sing along, but I think she's still a little early.
Sure.
She'll be three at the end of the month.
That's right.
Yeah. So she's at the point where she understands the music and she likes listening to it and dancing to it, but she doesn't sing along to it yet. So I don't have an impetus to sing along to it yet. But the day is coming, yeah. believe me.
And it's a great day. I've got three little ones who sing around the house all day long. Newsies was on Netflix, so we watched that. And I actually took the two oldest to see Newsies at Circa 21 a couple weeks ago. But so we have lots of Seizing the Day being sung around our household. So you have Frozen 2 coming out, and you know, you mentioned Moana, so this is a perfect segue into one of the other we saw of Hobbs and Shaw, the latest installment of the Fast and Furious franchise. I'm kind of sold on anything that The Rock does at this point.
He hasn't...
Talk about printing money.
Yeah, he hasn't screwed something up in so long, it's hard not to believe this is going to be great. And it looks... Here's my thing. Since Fast and Furious 2, I have not... That movie was so god-awfully, horribly, horrendously bad that it completely turned me off from the rest of the series. So I have not seen another Fast and
you
Furious
haven't
movie.
You have to watch Fast 5.
I watched Fast and the Furious 1, and I thought it was pretty good. I'm not a big, like, car... like
me either.
60
me either.
Seconds
yeah,
and
yeah.
those kinds of movies, not my big thing. But Fast and the Furious 2 was so bad that I have not come back to the series. But this looks like something that could draw me back, because it doesn't feel to me like a Fast and the Furious movie. It feels to me like that kind of... two cops don't like each other, have right. to work together to defeat the blah, 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 blah. And I love Idris Elba, which is,
yeah.
you know, anything that he's doing, I'm on board.
Yeah, that's what I think they've figured out the formula. We put The Rock, we put Idris Elba, and then we just have Jason Statham, you know, just
be the snarky British
guy. Being handsome and driving cars quickly. So I'm looking forward to that one. I like the Fast and Furious movies largely because I like to watch people who think that they are upper echelon actors prove that they're really not. So like Paul Walker and Vin Diesel to me are just, it's just pure comedy watching those two be so serious. Like I genuinely believe that those two felt like they should have been cast in Brokeback Mountain. Like they
like
should have
that level of dramatic actor.
Yeah, like what was that Vin Diesel movie where he put on a wig and acted like he was a lawyer? It was awful. I can't remember.
I don't
what
even
it was.
Know. The
it
last Vin terrible. Diesel movie I saw was Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how far back you have to go to find a Vin Diesel movie.
You didn't see The Tooth Fairy or what? No, The Tooth Fairy is The Rock. Is The Tooth Fairy The Rock?
Yeah, I think
The Tooth Fairy
is
The Rock.
Vin Diesel did something. Like
it was.
That
it was like the. It's gonna drive me nuts. He's like a Secret Service agent that ends up like the babysitter.
Yes,
maybe it was called the babysitter or something
like
that. Yeah, it was bad. It's not as good as the babysitter of with Jonah Hill, which is a hilarious movie. So we've got Hobbs and Shaw coming out, and then what was the other trailer I wanted to talk about? Maybe there wasn't one. Yeah, but Disney's got a big movie coming out every single month. They've got Lion King, Aladdin. Aladdin's going to be bad. I just really think it's going to be bad.
I'm torn because Aladdin is my favorite Disney movie, but without
Robin Williams,
because that's what makes it my favorite, is Robin Williams' Genie.
I honestly have a hard time watching Aladdin now. Like we have it on Blu-ray and DVD for our kids. And like it just makes me sad, not like knowing that Robin Williams is dead. Like there's kind of that effect. And I don't like Will Smith that much. Like outside, like I like Will Smith in Ali and Pursuit of Happiness. I think he's better in that like actually dramatic sensibility than
I agree
the comedic sensibility.
Well, whenever he's being comedic, all I can see is Fresh Prince.
Yeah. Which is a great Fresh Prince reference.
Which is
in Captain Marvel.
That's true. They'd make a good one. But even in Fresh Prince, all the best scenes are when he's being dramatic.
Yeah.
I think that's
that
just
show
what
had
he
underrated heart. Like, I think really he's a real dude. I think he's a good actor. I think he has that ability to come at you. The Pursuit of Happiness, I can't watch that movie. It makes me cry. That movie is going to be big. We're going to be back with the One Seat Buffer next week, I believe, with Us, which is the new Jordan Peele flick that's coming out, which looks – Tony's going to make me watch it, and I'm going to be scared the entire time. Next time you see him, ask him about the time we went and saw It together.
The new one?
Yeah, the new one.
No.
I literally almost reached for his like hand. Like I didn't realize it was just reflexive. It was bad. It was bad. And this looks more horror-ish than Get Out was. But you said you haven't seen Get Out.
I know.
Yet.
I'm gonna catch so much. Yeah, you can at me for that too if you really want to.
Sorry. Right. You've been busy living a real person's life.
Want to see it if that counts for
it
anything.
It does count. You win. And then Shazam. We're going to see Shazam in a couple of weeks. What's your thoughts on Shazam?
It makes me really, really nervous. First of all, because it's a DC movie. Shazam, who also was originally called Captain Marvel. They're like 1 for 12 or whatever it
what's
is.
Do you lump the Christopher Nolan Batmans even
no,
into DC?
I
don't think
don't.
You can.
I leave. They are their own thing, and coming back to Tim Burton, I still think that Tim Burton's Batman is the best one of them all. But the Nolan verse is its own thing. I would still love to see them come back and do one of those with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Nightwing. Just to get more of the, because he wouldn't have like the ninja training and stuff, but it would get back to kind of the roots of Batman World's Greatest Detective, where he is like, he's legitimately solving crime, right? Make the villain the Riddler and have him have to, you know, put on his brain instead of punching people in the face and actually be a detective for a while. But no, the new Disney, or excuse me, the new DC universe, I think that they've had one good movie so far, and I don't think that Shazam is going to follow up. I just don't.
I'm going to give Zachary Levi a chance. He's my guy. I watched Chuck. If you haven't seen him as in the Broadway musical She Loves Me, he's such a tremendous musician. Zachary Levi's gonna get my, and he's underrated as the voice of Finn Rider in Tangled. So
my
sad.
Little sister's favorite movie.
I shouldn't like that as much as I do, but I do. I'm a sucker for Disney musicals, is what we're learning.
It was The Pacifier, by the way. It was the Vin Diesel,
the
horrible
pacifier.
Vin Diesel movie
there
where
is.
He was a babysitter. But no, Tangled also better than Frozen in my opinion.
Ooh, that's a hot take. That is a hot take.
It
right
goes
there.
Moana, Tangled, then Frozen. All right, of those three, and they're all good. Don't get me wrong. The Disney animated stuff has been good of late.
I'm not a Princess and the Frog guy.
No, I'm not.
I love
either.
That kind of music too. It just wasn't me.
Yeah, I don't think that one was. It didn't hit as hard as I wanted it to.
But it needed to be made. It was important that it was made at the time.
Very
that it was made. All right, Julian, it's late. I cannot thank you enough for coming out and spending some time with us. And you are always welcome on the One Seat Buffer. Like our page on Facebook. Also, make sure you subscribe and comment on your favorite podcast service, whether it's iTunes or Spotify. Thank you guys so much for listening. And Julian, thanks so much for spending time with the One Seat Buffer.
Pleasure. If this movie theater ever needs solar, have them call me.